Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Two-thirds of Pennsylvania's municipalities rely on the Pennsylvania State Police for their full or part-time police coverage. Just more than half of the municipalities, almost 1,300, are covered by the state police full-time, meaning they have no local police department. Last year, there was little net change in the number of municipalities being covered by the state police, but the number grew up until 2017, and state police operating costs also increased to $677 million during the 2017-18 fiscal year. A lot of that money was meant for repairing and upgrading the state's transportation infrastructure. There have been and are renewed calls for municipalities to pay additional fees if they rely on state police for coverage. This has long been a priority with our guest today, Democratic State Representative Mike Sterla of Lancaster County. Representative Sterla, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
If you have a question or a comment, and we know you have a lot of opinions on this issue, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can also leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. As I said, this has long been an issue that has been a priority for you. Why?
Yeah. Well, back when I first started on this issue, we were only stealing about $200 million a year from the Motor License Fund. The Motor License Fund is set up in Pennsylvania, according to the Constitution, for roads and bridges and road repairs and the safety of the roads. 3 years ago, we were taking $800 million out of the Motor License Fund to help pay for state police patrols in areas that didn't have a local police department. So that fund only generates about $3 billion. We were taking $800 million right off the top. And people in Pennsylvania know we have the highest gasoline tax of any state in the nation. But $800 million of the $3 billion is not going to pave roads and fix bridges and fill potholes. It's going to pay for someone's free state police protection.
When I say, I want to clarify here, when you say $800 million just for those municipalities that don't have their local police departments or don't have local police departments, is that just that $800 million is just for that, or is that the entire state police budget overall?
That $800 million goes to help pay for the state police, but that's about half the state police budget. Now, look, there are things that the state police do that benefit all of us. You know, they have crime labs. They do, interagency investigations. They do intermunicipal investigations. They do, drug task forces. They do all sorts of great things for the entire state of Pennsylvania. And I believe that part should be paid out of the general fund budget. But when some of the citizens get over and above that in terms of local patrols, then I think that's responsibility of that local government. And I say that because, as you point out, look, it's 1,300 of the municipalities in the state. About half the state's municipalities get full-time police protection. If you look at it geographically, it's about 80% of the landmass. You go, well, my gosh, everybody's benefiting from that. Why not? Well, the numbers say something different. It's 22% of the state's population is getting about $615 million spent exclusively on them for police patrols. We did a legislative budget and finance committee report that came out a couple years ago, said it costs about $234 per capita over and above anything else that the state police do just to patrol in those areas that don't have local police departments. Mm-hmm. So what I look at and say, okay, so if it costs $234 per capita and you want to keep that free state police protection, how about if the other 78% of the state's population gets reimbursed $234 per capita to their municipality to pay for local police? That would take about $2 billion out of the Motor License Fund. So we can continue to do this and raid the Motor License Fund and have it pay for police protection, and then there'll be no Motor License Fund. So we will pay the highest gasoline taxes and have no money for roads and bridges and potholes.
That $234 per capita previous proposal that you had, if I remember correctly, was $250. There would be a $250 per person fee. The legislation that you're proposing now that Governor Wolf supports does not ask for that. But before we go to the current legislation, why pull away from that $250 per person?
Well, I actually was at 156. I was at $3 per week per person, which by any stretch of the imagination is a cheap way to get your policing. And that was to recoup about $450 million of the $800 million. There are other proposals that have been put out. Senator Ward had a proposal that said municipalities should be able to buy state police protection for their district specifically, and those would be dedicated police officers, but at a great reduced discount. Representative Saylor from York had a proposal that said municipalities that had more than 10,000 people could pay, and ones that didn't have 10,000 people would not pay anything because he didn't have any municipalities that had more than 10,000 people. So this was really looking at, what do other members have in terms of proposals? And let's try and figure out a hybrid. So this proposal that the governor wants this year and that I ended up prime sponsoring along with Senator Costa over in the Senate is to say, okay, you know what? The small municipalities, maybe they don't have the wherewithal, although we're still talking about numbers of people, but we'll charge them $8 per capita. If it's a municipality like Hempfield Township in Westmoreland County that has 40,000 citizens, the average income in that township is above the statewide average, they're going to pay $166 per capita. Still a bargain. Still way less than what it actually costs to provide the patrols in that municipality. But they, as a municipality that's that size, should really have the wherewithal to do that kind of thing.
Logistically, how would it work? I mean, would it be up to the municipality to send a bill to the resident or what?
Well, the only thing we're doing is in the legislation, we prohibit it being charged on a per capita basis. And the reason for that is we don't want the family with four kids to say, hey, we just got a bill for six people for police patrols. But guess what? The Walmart down the street doesn't have any per capita, so they don't get a bill. Because we know that what the state police are doing in a lot of cases, we've seen the demand for increased patrols in the Marcellus Shale industry because there's increased truck traffic. And we've seen increased shoplifting in places like Walmarts and things like that. So they're out doing things, in a lot of cases, patrolling businesses instead of people. But nonetheless, you still need that protection. What we're suggesting to the municipalities is we don't care whether it's their business privilege tax, we don't care whether it's their local property tax, we don't care what it is. How would you normally pay for police protection if the state wasn't providing it for free? But we're going to send you a bill based on per capita so that you need to then pay that back to the state. As it is, this proposal generates $100 million. So even though the cost of providing those patrols is $615 million, we're asking for $100 million back. We just want them to have a little bit of skin in the game.
Well, that was my next question. I mean, when you're talking that much of a disparity, my guess is that you would prefer to have a much higher fee that they would pay part of that $600 million.
Yeah, and what we're trying to do right now is we, in the fiscal code 3 years ago, we passed legislation that said that we had to start taking less money out of the motor license fund. We had to take $30 million a year less out of the motor license fund to pay for the state police. So 3 years later now, we're at $100 million. So my sense would be that each year we would try and get another $30 million out of those local municipalities, at least until we got to the $300 million mark. The reason for that being that, they would be paying they'd be paying 50 cents on the dollar for police protection, a bargain by any stretch of the imagination. But what we don't want is for that $300 million loss of revenue to be then shifted over to the general fund. And whether I'm paying for it as a citizen that has my own local police department, whether I'm paying for it in the motor license fund or whether I'm paying it out of the general fund, I'm still buying my neighbor's free police protection. What we've also heard from municipalities that do have local police departments and the neighboring municipality doesn't, many times when there's a call goes out, look, police officers respond because that's what they do. And so if there is a domestic violence call or a bank robbery in a municipality that doesn't have a local police department, and the local police department that's next door, that might be a mile away, when they hear that call, they go respond, and oftentimes they're there sooner than the state police that are patrolling and have to come from across the county somewhere. When they do that, they can't send the neighboring municipality a bill for the police service. There's no mechanism for them to do that. And they report that they spend hundreds of thousands of dollars of taxpayer money from the municipality that does have a police department to patrol in the area that doesn't have a police department or to respond to emergency calls. That there's just an inherent unfairness in that.
All right. Obviously, there's more than one side on, sure, on this. Dave Sanko, who is the executive director of the Pennsylvania State Association of Township Supervisors, was on Smart Talk back in April. Now, he gave two examples of why municipality residents shouldn't have to pay anything. Let's listen to what he had to say.
It's a small community that does not have a local police department and has state police who patrols their area. The state police there do not enforce local ordinances. They enforce state laws. We look to Philadelphia as an example, which has their own police department. In fact, the largest police department in Pennsylvania with over 5,000 officers. They also have a state police safety net. In fact, Philadelphia has over 30,000 state police dispatches a year. So to use the governor's model, these communities that don't have a local police department would have to pay for state police coverage, but the city of Philadelphia, because they have a local police department and use far more state police services than anybody else, would not have to pay. And I would argue that inverse is equally unfair.
All right, so let's address those two instances one at a time. Start with Philadelphia.
Yeah.
The point that Dave Sanko makes, that Philadelphia has its own police department, largest in the state, but yet still gets state police coverage, would not be part of this.
Yeah. And they also have 1 million people. There's only 2 million people in the state that are getting the free state police protection.
The
point is, the state police are still going to do the same things they're doing in Philadelphia for the rest of the state. I'm not charging them for that. That's stuff that we expect the state police to do statewide. What I don't expect the state police and what they don't do in Philadelphia is respond to domestic violence calls, respond to shoplifting calls at the Walmart, respond to that. They don't do that in Philadelphia. They do that in the other part of the state. So what he's trying to mix apples and oranges here. I fully expect the state police statewide to be doing drug task forces, background checks, intergovernmental crimes that are going on, things that cross municipal borders. I want them to do that across the state. What I don't want them to do is to be doing things that otherwise a local police department would do. Now, Dave says, and they don't, you know, they don't, state police don't enforce any local ordinances. The state police don't enforce any local ordinances in any, the local police don't enforce any local ordinances in any municipality that has a police department. You don't have local police going out and giving citations for high grass or unpainted buildings or parking. Those are all things that are done by parking authorities, zoning officers. Again, it's a specious argument.
Well, but okay, there are some examples where there's local ordinances. I'm thinking of like a loitering law, for example. Local police department, if you know there's a loitering law, would stop and say, hey, listen, you guys got to move on or whatever. You can't loiter here. State police won't do that.
If the state police get a call saying there's some suspicious person outside my business and I want you to come check them out, the state police show up.
Okay, that's a suspicious person.
But that's what loitering is.
Okay. Well, I guess what I'm looking at is who picks and chooses what the state police or the local police are going to enforce.
Yeah. Well, the point being that right now, no one makes that decision in those municipalities that get the free police protection. The state police respond to every call. They don't say, I'm sorry, that's not part of what we do. They respond to every call.
We will be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Check out upcoming topic for Smart Talk at WITF.org/smarttalk. You can see some of the shows that we're working on, such as cyber charter schools, migraine headaches, and suicide websites out there. Also, Governor Tom Wolf will be with us tomorrow. We'll be talking about his Restore PA plan having to do with infrastructure. We invite you to share your questions in advance by sending us a voice memo or leaving voicemail. See what's coming up at WITF.org/smarttalk. Today we're with State Representative Mike Sterla talking about legislation that would ask a fee of residents and municipalities that don't have local police coverage, that rely on state police coverage, for their police coverage. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Representative Sterla, as far as who pays for what? I do have another clip here with Dave Sanko from the State Association of Township Supervisors talking about who does pay.
If I could, real quick, you know, part of the thing is if a local municipality even pays for part-time local police, whether they can buy it from a neighboring municipality, then they don't have to pay this fee. So think about this. You have a town of 500 people. And we're talking about an $8 fee for them. That's $4,000. I defy them to go and find some local municipality that will sell them a part-time officer for $4,000. This is such a bargain, it's unreal. So if they do, though, if they find a local municipal department neighboring to them that says, yeah, we'll come over and patrol for you part-time, then they don't have to pay. So this argument that, well, Philadelphia should have to pay too because they have 5,000 officers but still get state police protection. Spend enough for one part-time police officer and you don't have to spend anything on the state police either. But do something. Don't just say, I'm going to be on the dole. We hear people that are constantly saying, why does everybody get welfare benefits? You know, some people get welfare benefits in the form of food stamps. Some people get welfare benefits in the form of hundreds of millions of dollars worth of free police protection.
Let's listen to Dave Sanko again.
The money that it's going from the gas tax is paying for state police coverage across the board. It's not going just into communities that don't have police coverage. And in reality, if we look at the service coverage, it's not going into communities that don't have police coverage at all. It's going in to pay the pension costs that are controlling, driving most of the state police budget. So if we look at the total costs and residents saying, what are we willing to pay for? I mean, everybody pays income tax. Everybody, for that income tax, everybody gets state police service. If you want additional law enforcement, you agree to pay for additional law enforcement, you put an additional force on.
So I don't think
those townships are getting anything. They're not getting any more free state police coverage than the city of Philadelphia is getting free state police coverage.
You're chomping at the bit with that.
Yeah. Look, the Legislative Budget and Finance Committee said it costs about $234 per capita for the state police to patrol in the areas that don't have local police departments. Give me $234 per capita for that 78% of the state's population that has their own local police department, and I'll go away. Because that means that you're going to spend $2 billion of the motor license fund or the general fund to help me police in my local municipality that has a local police department. So this idea that those municipalities get as much service is just flat out bunk. It's not true. We don't have 24-hour police protection from the state police in the municipalities that have local police departments. Philadelphia may, because they have 1 million people there. So that's what the equivalent of part-time in any other place, because you have a couple police officers for 1 million people.
We have a phone call here from Mike, and well, we'll get to Mike here in just a moment. I did want to bring up, we're talking a lot about the motor license fund, Act 89, 2013, Tom Corbett was governor. A lot of people pointed at Act 89 and said that this was the crowning achievement of the Corbett administration. It got bipartisan support because what it would do, it raised the gas tax, was not very popular, but still raised the gas tax. Pennsylvania's the highest gas tax in the country. $2.5 billion a year was supposed to go toward upgrades, repairs of highway infrastructure. It seemed like it was a bit of a surprise that so much money was going toward the state police. First of all, was it a surprise? And what are we missing out on in this state, in your opinion, that's not being done because money's being diverted to state police?
Well, you know, again, according to the Legislative Budget and Finance Report, we're taking $615 million a year and using it to pay for state police services in those municipalities that would otherwise go for paying for bridges and roads. And if I monetize $615 million a year and do a bond issue with it, I can do a $10 billion bond issue. You can fill a lot of potholes with $10 billion. So that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about $10 billion worth of infrastructure over the next 20 years that's not getting done in municipalities that have a police department and ones that don't. It's still $10 billion worth of road work that's not getting done.
But the legislation you're proposing right now, we established earlier that it's not going to come near paying for that. So you're still looking at work that's not going to get done.
We're still looking at some work that's not going to get done. I'm going to get $100 million more worth of work done this year. So maybe I'll get $1 billion worth of work more done, or $1.5 billion more worth of work done. And then next year, if I get another $30 million, and a year after that, I get another $30 million, and a year after that, now I'm going to have $3 billion worth of work getting done. I mean, you have to start at some point in time. And so, you know, I really think that it's something that we have to address. And if we don't, we're always going to have the worst. We're going to have the highest gas tax and some of the worst roads.
We had a call from Mike, who's actually from Hagerstown, Maryland, says how it works in Maryland when it comes to small municipalities is that the state police handle what's going on in the highways and assist county police if requested. They take care of that. Why does Pennsylvania work so differently than Maryland?
Yeah, well, Maryland has a system where they have countywide police forces. We don't. We have every municipality in the state of Pennsylvania either has a police force or doesn't have anything and relies solely on the state police. You know, so we're different. You know, it was pointed out a few years back when there was the sniper in Maryland. It required one county police officer, one county police sheriff who was in charge of it all. They said if that had occurred in Pennsylvania, it would have involved 60 police departments.
So it's just that the state is so much different.
Just that the state is so much different, yeah. But I agree with what he says. That's the way it should be done. I think the state police should be patrolling the interstate highways. I think the state police should be doing anything that crosses municipal lines, anything that's happening statewide. That's what the state police should be doing. They shouldn't be going and doing shoplifting calls or domestic violence calls in a local municipality.
House Bill 959, that's the bill, the bill number. I know a lot of listeners won't remember that, but I'll just identify it that way. It would provide for the population-based fee, proposed by Governor Wolf and Senator Costa, as you mentioned earlier, is in the Transportation Committee, which meets on Monday. The committee is scheduled for a hearing on a different bill, but want to know what you've heard about the prospects that there will be a vote or a discussion at that time.
Well, you know, some of this depends on whether certain individuals have districts that have a lot of free state police protection and other certain individuals that don't. Look, if I am a legislator that has 60,000 people and you're going to start charging them $166 per capita, it's like me getting a $10 million wham. Which we say, oh, we don't have
walk-around money.
We don't have those in the budget anymore. Well, guess what? These legislators are getting $10 million that the other 78% of the legislature is not getting. And if I'm a senator, it's like having a $40 million wham. Not a bad deal. Guess what? If I have any opportunity to squash something like this, I'm going to kill it, because after all, I get to go back to my district, beat my chest and say, you don't have to pay for police protection. I got it for you for free. I
have a few emails here. Let's see. Let's go to Jeff. He asks, your per capita cost for state police protection is misleading. A sleepy little municipality of, say, 200 people close to a station is way less costly to patrol than a similarly sized municipality far from a station with more criminal or traffic activity. Activity levels are totally different. Who's assessing what the real costs are for specific municipalities?
Well, you know what? It's been suggested that we only charge municipalities for the actual costs of what goes on in those municipalities. Guess what? I'm okay with that also, but I guarantee you that the insurance for that municipality is going to be so exorbitant, they won't be able to afford it. Because think about this. You know, you're a sleepy little municipality, and gosh, you get one or two calls a year, and that only costs you a couple thousand dollars. Great deal. I love it. And then you have an incident like we had where the guy came and killed two state police officers, and you have an intensive manhunt for 30 days. I'm going to send that little municipality a bill for, what, $1 million, $2 million, $5 million, $10 million? Good luck.
We have another email here from Mike. It says, with all due respect, please call the proposal a tax and not a fee, and I'm not in favor of it either way. Our local municipality has chosen not to have local police protection. Other than our rural area, we have two major state highways run through our township, which I see firsthand generate state police responses. Is that our local municipality's responsibility? What's the original purpose of the state police, and does that need to change?
Yeah, no, under this proposal, the state police would still be in charge of the interstate highways. I believe that the state police belong on the interstate highways. I believe the state police belong. I don't want local police on the interstate highways, because we see what happens is they have a stretch of a tenth of a mile and they go out there and try and generate revenue off of that tenth of a mile.
Are you saying that happens?
I'm saying that happens.
Kind of cynical, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes, well, it's the reality, you know. So I want the state police to be patrolling the interstate highways. But I don't think they should be getting off and responding to every call in a local municipality that has nothing to do with what they're assigned to be doing, which is the things that affect all Pennsylvanians and across municipal boundaries. So, you know, look, again, tell me how we're going to do this. There's still a cost involved. If you want to call it a tax, call it a tax, but this is a fee for service.
And by the way, you know, I'm not like lecturing you or anything, but you know it's illegal for local municipalities to try to generate revenue through.
Technically, yes, but yes. I know that they still send their police officers out occasionally to patrol the tenth of a mile of interstate that runs through their municipality.
So would you oppose, I know I'm getting on another issue, would you oppose local police departments having radar?
No, I actually am for local police departments having radar.
Even though they, under what you're saying, they could generate revenue that way.
Well, it's really hard to generate revenue in local municipalities, particularly in cities where, you know, you're going from 35 miles an hour to you know, 40 miles an hour and writing a ticket on that. That's just public safety as much as anything. You know, the other thing, let me point out one other thing. When the state police, who provide free police protection for the municipality that refuses to pay for local police, when the state police write a ticket in that municipality, at the end of the month, part of the fine goes to the municipality where the ticket was written. So not only are we providing free state police protection for those municipalities, we send them a bonus check at the end of the month. That, to me, is like insult to injury. It is, you know. And to his credit, Governor Corbett, during his administration, stopped that for 1 year. And the members of the legislature that had the areas that were then losing that bonus check at the end of the month for the state police providing free protection for them got up in arms and changed the law.
Thomas says, Mr. Sterla lives in Lancaster City. They have a police department. Rural cities and towns do not have that, but still pay taxes. I feel these small towns deserve state police coverage. What about the taxes these rural persons pay? You kind of addressed that earlier.
Look, all my citizens pay state taxes also. Give us the $234 per capita that it costs to patrol in the areas that don't have police departments, and I'll go away. I'll be the happiest camper in the world.
Blaine says, have the state pay for all policing, and then we will find out if people don't want the local police departments or just don't want to pay. State police do not enforce local ordinances. Okay, so we kind of touched on that. Your proposal, I just want to make sure. One thing that in our reporting here, WITF, we've been told that the state police have been tabulating more detailed data on responses by hand, which is why it's taking so long to get more specific data on how much time state police dedicate to municipal responses we might expect local departments would otherwise handle. It seems hard to believe that the state police don't have more sophisticated methods at their disposal. What's your understanding of record keeping, and why do it by hand?
Yeah, well, I agree. We should be doing more of it by computer. But part of the other thing that happens is, and this is how it's been explained to me, so you have a state police officer and he's sitting along a road somewhere and gets a call and he's supposed to go 20 miles to where he needs to respond. Is the time he drives to where he's supposed to respond considered part of going to that call, or is that him patrolling the road till he gets to that point? And the people that say, we don't want to pay for anything, say, well, he was patrolling the road while he was driving to that response. I say, no, from the time he got the call until the time that he's done with that call, that's his response time. That's part of that call. That's, you know. So there's in a lot of cases, he gets there and it's, you know, somebody who says, hey, I didn't like the guy standing out in front of my store. And he says to the guy, move along, and the guy moves along. And so it took 30 seconds for the actual enforcement, and it took 30 minutes to get there. Some people say, well, I only want to pay for the 30 seconds. I want them to pay for the 30 minutes.
It sounds as if some terms have to be defined in this.
Yeah. And look, this is, or we could just say, you know, you pay a flat fee. And again, because this idea that, well, we don't use all that all the time. Wait till you have one of those things that requires 30 days of manhunt and it costs $10 million. We're still only going to charge you $8 or $166 per capita for your service.
But people are thinking along those lines, that'll never happen here.
That'll never happen here. Yeah, until it does. And so what I'm saying is, you want to take that risk? Go ahead. But the day that that happens, your taxes, you know, your tax on your little house that's worth $100,000 is going to be $100,000, because that's your share of what you got to pay in that municipality to pay for the $10 million worth of manhunt.
As I said, you've been working on this for a long time. So, and it hasn't happened up until now. You do have the governor's backing on this. So what happens with it? I mean, the legislators in rural areas, why would they support this?
Well, they won't, but they're only 22% of the legislature. So in theory, we should be able to get 78% of the legislature. Now, if I look at the hard numbers, there's about 90 of the 203 members in the House that 100% of their district is patrolled by local police departments. It would be in their benefit 100%. When you get to the guys that 50% of their district is patrolled by local police departments and 50% is free state police, they say to me, why are you putting me in a pickle between my constituents? Some of them like this, some of them hate it. And the ones that are in the 90-10 districts, I go, aren't the 90% of your constituents that are paying for police protection upset that they're paying for the other 10% free? So I think there's enough votes to do it. What we got to do is get it out of the committee and onto the floor in both the House and the Senate. I think there's actually enough votes to do it. There are some key people that have been blocking it for years. And I think one of the reasons we're trying to ratchet up the information on this is so that those other legislators start to hear from their constituents and say, hey, how comes I'm not getting my roads paved and they're getting free state police protection?
Democratic State Representative Mike Sterla of Lancaster. Representative Sterla, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Listen, tomorrow for Smart Talk, Governor Tom Wolf will be our guest on tomorrow's program. We'll talk to the governor about his Restore Pennsylvania program, or proposal, I should say. Also tomorrow, migraine headaches. June is Migraine Headache Awareness Month, and something that one-third of Americans suffer from migraine headaches at one time or another. Not something you hear a conversation about very often, but we will have that on tomorrow's Smart Talk. Today's Marketplace encourages entrepreneurs to develop new ideas. But once you have an idea, where do you go? Who can help you take that idea to the next level? Universities across Pennsylvania offer campus space where students and community members connect with fellow entrepreneurs, experienced business people, and interested financiers. Today's program is part of Innovation U. It's a new project from WITF where we share stories of how entrepreneurs and these academic incubators are striving to make ideas come to life. Joining us on today's program, Jim Hohen, who is regional president for PNC in Central Pennsylvania. Jim, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Scott. Glad to be here.
Also joining us on the phone is James DeLatra, Penn State's Director of the Office of Entrepreneurship and Commercialization. Mr. DeLatra, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott.
And Joseph Katanga is a Penn State alumnus and founder of Vitable. Am I pronouncing that correctly, Joe?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Vitable. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Joseph Katanga, let me start with you. Tell me about Vitable. Tell me about your business.
Yeah, thank you for having me. So at Vitable, we're essentially an on-demand urgent care service. We make house calls for urgent care. So our members pay a small monthly fee to become members and get access to our network of board-certified nurse practitioners who then make house calls and are able to prescribe medication if medically appropriate. And so the things that we're able to do is, you know, lower the price of non-emergency acute care that would, you know, usually land people in the ER unnecessarily and have them spend, you know, the average $1,300 if they aren't insured or if they have a high deductible plan. And so for us, it's really about providing a more convenient experience at a lower price.
So how'd you come up with the idea?
So my family runs a home health care agency based in Philadelphia. And so I grew up working there, and I saw the value that, you know, home-based healthcare can provide specifically for seniors. But with what we're doing with urgent care, it's really my sister had gone to the ER and she'd spent for my little nephew, and you know, it was just a minor ear infection, and they'd spent about 2 hours in the waiting room, and they'd been charged about $1,500, which she had to pay about $1,000 out of pocket because of her high deductible. And so I just thought we could make that experience better for her, where, you know, have someone come to her, but, you know, really help offset that cost, because utilizing a network of practitioners who are able to prescribe and are usually some of the people that, you know, see those non-emergency ailments, would be able to lower the price as well. So that's kind of where, you know, my family's background and my sister's experience provided was really the inception of the concept.
So once you had the idea, where did you go with it?
So I was fortunate enough to have been a part of the Happy Valley launch box powered by PNC up in State College during an earlier program. So when I had the idea, I just I spoke with some of the people that ran it, like Lee Erickson and some of the other folks there, and they really provided me, you know, with the resources and helped connect me with some of the people that were, you know, crucial to helping me get the idea up and running.
All right. So, James DeLatra, tell me about the Penn State program.
Sure. So, the Happy Valley Launch Box, powered by PNC Bank, is a resource hub for entrepreneurs like Joe. It's located in downtown State College and open to not just undergraduates, as Joe was when he had his idea, but also community members, faculty, recent alumni. It serves the entire community, and in fact serves beyond just Center County. We've offered services to entrepreneurs from Altoona the whole way to Wilkes-Barre. So what do we do there? There's really three main things. There's co-working, where aspiring entrepreneurs like Joe can network and meet with mentors. We have an accelerator program which helps founders quickly de-risk their business idea. You know, from time to time, someone will come in the door and they've got an idea that isn't quite fleshed out, and you know, you don't want to tell them that their baby is ugly. What you want to do is give them the tools to go out and find out if their product meets a market need.
What if their baby is ugly?
Well, that's where, it's a great question, and that's where pivoting and spending more time understanding real market needs is important, and that's exactly what Joe did, right? He took the observation of his sister's experience and saw that there was a gap in the market.
Does this, you know, I think probably what a lot of people are picturing is like a Shark Tank, the TV program where some entrepreneurs come in and pitch an idea. Is it like that, or just how does it work logistically?
Yeah, so I would say it's a much more nurturing environment than you would get on Shark Tank. there are a number of types of accelerator programs. And the first one is called the Idea Test Lab, and it's 4 weeks where you just get out of the building and go talk to someone who might be interested in buying your product. So it's not that the folks that work in the launch box sit in judgment of the entrepreneurs, but rather they encourage them to go and test the market, and that's, I think, a much healthier way to get folks to explore the opportunities and to land on an idea that really matters.
So Jim Hone, regional president for PNC here in Central Pennsylvania, as we've heard, this is a program that is powered by PNC. How'd PNC get involved?
Well, I think one of the things that's most important to us is to ensure the kind of economic vibrancy of our marketplace, not just now, but in the years to come. And we know that the businesses and the success of current businesses is extremely important. But we also know that it's very important to nurture that culture of entrepreneurship, that next generation of who's going to bring the great ideas and business success and the employment to our markets down the road. And nurturing that in conjunction with the great resources of higher education that we have across the Commonwealth is really what drove us. You know, Pennsylvania is our home. We've been in our business for 160 years in this marketplace, and we want to continue to not only have a great business environment for us, but really for all of our citizens. And partnering with higher education to nurture that culture of entrepreneurship is really an important thing to do.
That partnership you're talking about, it is mm-hmm. not just Penn State. There are a number of other colleges and universities across the state, correct?
Well, I know there's a lot of entrepreneurship programs that going along the lines of what Invent Penn State has done, whether the Innovation U program has really highlighted those programs at Pitt, at Carnegie Mellon, at Lehigh, at Susquehanna University, here in Harrisburg, at Harrisburg University. Of all the great things that are coming out of these higher ed in collaboration with businesses, these are things that are going to sustain us in years to come.
You know, I'm curious. Right now, we have a booming economy by all the numbers, by all accounts. Unemployment, jobs are way down. You know, many people, we hear stories of people who started their own business when the times weren't so great. They did. I don't want to say they were forced to, but a lot of times they looked at it as their only option if they wanted to survive, make a living. In a good economy like this, is it a good time? Is it the best time for entrepreneurs to start a business?
I think good ideas and that culture of the entrepreneur, I think any time can be a good time. So I think with the advent in the change dynamics, it's happening in our economy, it's happening with technology, it's happening with the shared economy. I do think it's creating that culture of entrepreneurship of those individuals nurtured by folks like the Launchbox and Invent Penn State teams to really sort through these things, to triage the ideas through the incubator, to work on the accelerator, and to bring collaborative efforts, as James and the Penn State Group have done, in terms of bringing the business, the legal, the intellectual property rights, the engineering components together. So I think today is a great time. I think any time can be a good time, whether necessity is the mother of invention or not during the bad times. I think if you have the great idea and the tools and the collaborative community of help to surround you to begin to bring these things to market, it can always be a good time.
James, that brings up, and Jim just listed some of the things that you do, but I'm curious, when someone comes to you with an idea, or you say, you know, here's an idea I've been thinking about for some time, what don't prospective entrepreneurs know? I mean, they probably, a lot of them maybe have a business plan. Maybe they think have done some research on who their customers would be, that kind of thing. But what are they usually missing? How do they put it all together? How do you help to put it all together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there are some basics that quite often are missing. And this is especially acute if you have, let's say, an engineer or a scientist that spends a lot of time deep in the science. They may not have that line of sight through product development into the market, understand the market dynamics and how some of these things like regulated markets may impact the viability of their business. So a lot of those pieces are missing. And that's when we lean on the many collaborators that are networked through the Happy Valley Launch Box. So for example, Penn State Law has two legal clinics that operate out of the Launch Box, one that focuses on corporate documents, but also will do a scan for things like regulatory issues, and another one that helps with patents and trademarks. So those are often blind spots and strategies around how to manage those, and having the resources right there, right next to where they're co-working and where they're meeting their mentors is really valuable.
I've heard a term, and I hope I'm saying using this term correctly, drop deadline, that many entrepreneurs or would-be entrepreneurs run into a point where things get tough and they may want to stop. And let me go to Joe Katanga. Joe, was there ever a point where you thought, oh, I don't know, this is a good idea, but this is a lot of work and I don't know whether I'll be able to go further? Did you ever run into that?
There have been many moments, but especially early on, I think. For me, I mean, with the concept, just being able to see whether it was viable to utilize nurse practitioners and, you know, the regulatory approval that we'd have to get to be able to start operating. I think at that point was really difficult, and I really leaned on some of the advisors that the Launch Box provided to be able to, you know, not only provide advice, but just some words of encouragement that were very timely at the time. So you know, whenever those moments do arise, even now, I just shoot over an email, and they're usually able to, you know, give me some pointers and some ideas that I might not have thought about.
James, it sounds as if there has to be a side of you or someone in the program that has to be a psychologist that, or at least encouraging someone to keep going with this.
Yes. Lee Erickson, who is the chief amplifier at the Happy Valley Launch Box powered by PNC, often refers to herself as kind of the psychologist of the building, because you know, so much of the battle is within staying motivated, making sure that you're prioritizing real time every day and being honest about that. So you're absolutely right. There's a human component that is incredibly important beyond any technical or market component.
Jim, we only have about 90 seconds left. I want to thank you very much for being with us today. But this sounds like something that I guess what I almost would compare it to is an athletic program in a lot of ways, that there's coaching that goes there, there's ideas, there's a lot that goes into it. So what do you see the future with PNC and entrepreneurs?
Well, first of all, Scott, thank you. I want to thank you and WITF really for the collaboration and innovation to really bring these stories to light. And, you know, we've examined in excess of a dozen of them. So I think it's a terrific
program. And they're on
our
website, WITF.org. Right.
I think what the future is to continue to nurture that culture of entrepreneurship. We've got so much talent here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. We've got great higher ed, and to interface higher ed with the communities, as James talked about, and then interface with the resources of those great students, those great professors, those great resources. This is what is going to help the Commonwealth succeed, and this is, as PNC, we are going to continue to support this effort because, you know, being vibrant parts of the community as we are PNC, but also selfishly, we need a great marketplace to do business with in the future. Mm-hmm. So all this stuff is going to work together, and we're just so grateful for our partnerships with the folks at Penn State and with WITF, so thank you.
Jim Hone, Regional President for PNC in Central PA, James DeLatra with Penn State's Director. He's the Director of Office and Entrepreneurship and Commercialization. Joseph Katanga, Penn State alumnus and a founder of Vitable. Thank all of you for being with us today. Coming up on tomorrow's program, Governor Tom Wolf is with us to talk about the Restore PA proposal for infrastructure.